Yes. sometimes we can't, it takes a little time, it's hard to know one.
Yeah. Prabhupada mentioned this himself.
Why is it so important that we are now having this distinction about these three adhikaris? Is it normal that I see now this particular Leela?
Sure.
Yes, that I see some contradiction because we have some different.
Contradiction?
Before we said that if somebody is Muthana Adhikari, when he opens the mouth, he's not anymore Muthana Adhikari, he's Madhya Adhikari. And here the last one, names, we see that Muthana Adhikari makes some others to chant Hare Krishna, but how can he make to chant Hare Krishna if he cannot preach? And our spiritual master, all are preaching, Prabhupada is preaching. So many contradictions and stuff. So I don't know.
No, not really contradictions. First of all, he makes others chant just by his presence, not saying a word. Second of all, when he opens his mouth to actually teach and preach, and he's still Uttama, he can still be Uttama Bhagavata, but he acts as a Madhyama. And again, this is Bhagavata and these are all Adhikaris. So this can be a Bhagavata also. So this is a Bhagavata also. So these two, one can be an Uttama Adhikari, a little, but he by his level can be here or here still. So I mentioned specifically. I put them parallel because the name is similar. But they're not actually parallel. They're not parallel.
Okay.
This is just a chart for us to know the definition. And these are just different lines for us to see how we can advance. And Rupa Goswami gives this to us so that we can respect everybody properly. So this is basically this chart is given for us to see how we advance and how we can respect others. So, who do we respect? So, according to this verse, again, the Uttama, Uttama Adhikari, how do we respect? Yeah, all three. You do all three, the serve and Madhyama Adhikari. And then who can be disrespect? Who don't need help? Who don't have respect?
No.
Okay, you didn't follow this job. Okay. There's no one here who needs disrespect. We respect everyone. That's one very important point by Jiva Goswami, that faith in itself means respect. And if we have faith in Krishna, we'll respect everyone. That's why worship of the deity for Kanishka Adhikari is recommended to gradually purify him, and then he will develop firm faith and he will see the Lord in every heart. And that's how actually the deity should be worshipped according to Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. The deity worship means to see the deity in front, in the back, above, and below, on all sides, at all times. That's how you get to worship the deity according to Krishna's rules. So it is all about respect in relationship with others, but respect in different degrees. Like if somebody just chants but no principles or some dirty habits, then you don't closely associate. You respect only in your mind. You don't come and embrace and start discussing what he ate for breakfast and this. So there's just different degrees of respect, but all of them respect. So, please, I still have two questions. Can you please write them down and we'll come back to them, because I would like to still touch on the sixth verse, and then you see, if you still have a question, after we discuss this, then we'll speak more. Don't forget, please write them down. Alright, so, this verse 5 describes progress by different criteria, And which is the most difficult, you think, among these criteria? Five different lines. Vision. Okay. So that's why verse 6 speaks specifically about vision. So let's chant this verse 6. Drishtai samavatanitai vatushasya doshai nabra vedasami nabakta danasya bache ganga vatam nakarukudavena bankai Ramadhyatamagatatinirasarmai. Being situated, whoever has the English one, let's do the conclusion together. Being situated in its original Krishna conscious position,
a pure devotee does not identify with the body. Such a devotee should not be seen from a materialistic point of view. Indeed, one should overlook a devotee having a body, born in a low family, a body with a bad complexion, a deformed body, or a diseased or infirm body. And according to ordinary vision, such imperfections may seem prominent in the body of a pure devotee, but despite such seeming defects, the body of a pure devotee cannot be polluted. It is exactly like the waters of the Ganges, which sometimes during the rainy season are full of bubbles
called mana. The Ganges waters are not contaminated. Those who are advanced spiritual understanding may bathe in the Ganges without considering the condition of the water. So the comparison here is with the Ganges. So if you were in India, especially during the rainy season, like in the summer, Yamuna in Vrindavan, so low, sometimes there are places you can just walk across. Mm-hmm. But when the rainy season comes, it rises so many meters up that some places it goes several kilometers around. Ganga, you know, that it can flood the whole very large territory, sometimes it floods the whole Mayapur. And then it becomes very muddy, so it carries a lot of dirt and mud from all over. There is foam and all kinds of things are floating there. But it is still Ganga, and it is still Yamuna, and you can still feel it. And if you bathe in it, you can feel that this is not an ordinary river. Like Bhujanga, when he first came to India, he was anxious because he said, "I grew up on the ocean." You know? New York, so I grew up near the water, so I know what water is and how water can be wonderful. So he said, "I was afraid when I bathed in Ganga, it would be the same as any normal water, and he will not feel all these blessings that are described about Ganga. You know, that you, by bathing, you become free from all sin, and by bathing, you become purified and you become blessed." But he said, when I bathe, I felt that this is very different from ordinary water. There is the aura that is bath. Right? You have this experience also? Did you take bath in Yamuna?
I did in Ganga. In Yamuna. I Ganga. I had a bath in Yamuna. But I've been in Ganga.
Where?
In Mayapur.
In Mayapur. Yeah. Did you feel something special?
No.
No?
I don't think I did.
Yeah, that's the feeling. It's so difficult to be happy. So therefore, even if there is some dirt experiment, still the quality is there, the power is there. It is still safe. So the same comparison is with the devotee. In his body he may have some defects, but it doesn't mean that he doesn't have a spiritual power. And we have two levels here, Svabhava and Vapusha. Vapu. So Vapusha or Vapu, this is defects of the body, and Svabhava is a defect of the character. So even in the character there can be still some remnants of defects. Like somebody can be by nature angry, prone to anger, somebody can be somewhat harsh, because of this conditioning, somebody can be greedy. These three are mentioned by one of the commentators from the Upadeshana. But But despite these defects, which can be still remaining from his body, still we should not look at these defects. We should not see Bhakta Jana. We should not see devotees. Doesn't even say pure devotees, such as Bhakta Jana. Prabhupada makes it easier for us saying pure devotees. But in fact, the verse says Bhakta Jana means any devotee. You should not see materially devotees. In other words, you should see the spiritual nature of a devotee. And what does it mean to see a spiritual nature of a devotee? If you see somebody's spiritual nature of a devotee, what do you feel? This and to this person?
Love, inspiration, also
love, inspiration, respect.
Right.
So this is the big divide. This is the middle verse. There are 11 verses. So this verse is in the middle. 5 before and 5 after this verse. This verse is in the middle. It divides nectar devotion in two parts. This is like a big mountain pass. You know, like in the mountains, you can go up, and then you cross some mountain pass, and then naturally it becomes easier. You start going down. So this verse is the biggest challenge for us, you can say. And you can say that, you can see that holy name as focus of our practice is described only after this verse. And not only after this verse it is described how holy name can become next. Before, in other words, it means if you are not done, if you are not expert in following the previous six instructions, and how will it become Magna? You have to follow the previous six instructions and then it becomes Magna, the holy name becomes Magna. So this verse 6 is the doorway, the last gate to the land of bliss. Verse 5 describes something about external respect. Describes how do we, about etiquette, how do we behave with different levels of devotees. And if you follow that, that's already enough to be pretty much happy in this world. Even if we just externally follow the etiquette, it's enough to be pretty much undisturbed in this world. It's quite good, we will not have any drastic troubles. But if we want to actually cross into the different land, into the land of spiritual bliss, then this verse 6 has to be there. It means not only externally seeing different grades of devotees with corresponding proper respect. It means internally. Right? It means it speaks about vision. It speaks about the vision. That we should not see devotees through the prism of these faults. Either in the body or even in the character. So it's a very important verse. So therefore in this map I put it in the heart. So this is in our heart. Here we can respect them externally, but this means we respect them in our heart. We see them spiritually in our heart. Once we learn to do this, once we learn to actually have respect and spiritual vision towards any devotee, this is such a large step forward in spiritual life that everything changes. Everything can change in our life. So Srila Prabhupada speaks here about Shiva Bhakti, pure devotion. And in the second paragraph he says that you should be free from the material motives. Again, that's internal, right? Not external. All the previous verses they were speaking about something more or less external. But here, Prabhupada focuses on the internal. And then he says, in this Krishna consciousness movement, one's consciousness must be changed. Consciousness. If consciousness is aimed towards material enjoyment, it is material consciousness. And if it is aimed towards serving Krishna, it is Krishna consciousness. A surrendered soul serves Krishna without material considerations. This is actually the platform of full surrender. If you are able to see every devotee without any tinge of towards material things, that means we are totally surrendered. That means we have no material desires, we have no material motives. That means that we are actually a platform. We have completed our anatomy duty. Our anatomy duty is done. And we can rejoice on the platform of Nishka. And then we will get a fantastic taste. And Prabhupada says that from that level, advancement becomes as quick as fire in gunpowder. Did anybody of you burn gunpowder in the childhood? Who burned gunpowder in China? So how does it burn? Momentarily. So that's how, according to Srila Prabhupada in the first canto, that's how quick becomes our progress after we cross this mountain pass, after we cross beyond this path. This is something that requires a real work, something that we actually have to. And Srila Prabhupada here actually states this thing that we mentioned. Unless one is actually a devotee, you cannot see another devotee perfectly. So to respect others, to see others as devotees, I have to be a devotee. That's why also I see defects. To see defects, I have to have the same defect. To understand Greek, for me to understand Greek, I have myself to know Greek. Mm-hmm. If I hear some people talking in Greek, if I understand, it means I know the language. So I myself have the same language, I know these words. So if you see defects, that means I have these defects, I have these faults, or at least a tendency toward them, or a desire. But sometimes I have these very same defects even in a bigger proportion. In English there is this proverb, a kettle calling pot black. A kettle, you know, the kettle where you make tea. And the kettle calls the pot black. It's an old proverb before everything was done on fire. So the pots and kettles were becoming black at the bottom. And of course the kettle was the most black because it was most used, right? But he's calling the pot, oh, you're so black at the bottom. I think every language has this. In psychology it's called projection. So I have some defects, so I don't want to see this, but I project this on others. I see this on everybody else. Just like the joke about colonial officer, Englishman in India. Today we heard about Jackfruit Maharaj speaking. So he came to India and he had an orchard, big fruit orchard. And one of his workers, he liked fruits. One of his workers had some relative who died. One of his workers had some relatives who died. So he wanted to have a leave, a small leave for a few days. So he came to this boss, but he wanted to bring some gifts. So he brought a big, nice jackfruit. And this colonial officer, he saw this jackfruit, said, yeah, you can go. And he said, thank you very much for such a fruit. I never saw this fruit. So this is a new fruit. Very, you know, he liked exotic new things, so he also was very happy. So this orchard had deer, and he was shy to ask directions about how to eat this fruit. And this fruit can be very sticky, just like dough, you know, when you make some chapati or something, it can be very sticky. So when he started eating this fruit, a lot of this fruit went into his beard. And then, no matter how he tried to wash his beard, it didn't wash. It still stayed in his beard. So he tried and tried, and still, you know, some of these, you know, scraggly white stuff was still in the beard. So then he didn't have any other recourse but just
saved, and he comes to report to the to his boss. So the boss says, "Oh, hello." And then he says,
"You have your whole head shaved. What fruit did you eat? What fruit did you eat? I shaved my beard, but you have a head shaved. What kind of fruit that must have been?"
So, Atma Vamma Nityanjanam, we see others in terms of my experience. Mm-hmm. If I shave my beard because I eat fruit, so if you shave your head, must be because you ate some fruit. If I'm a cheater, I suspect everybody else is a cheater. Mm-hmm. It's bothering them, bothering themselves. So that's why it is quite unhealthy to point out defects, and that's why also Bhagavatam, the first time was that if somebody points out some crime or fault in somebody else, he gets the same punishment. Because as we say, you know, if we point a finger at somebody, then three fingers point back at us. Yes? Sometimes we have three times much more of the same fault. And that is, a couple of years ago, Janmashtami told me something funny. He said that when you point a finger at somebody, then one finger points at them, three fingers point at us, and one finger points at God. You know? He allowed it. So we blame the Lord also. Trying to avoid responsibility. So the reverse is also true. To see good, to see some good quality in others, we also have to have some of that good quality. And that's why it's one of the very important exercises to find good qualities in others. To find good qualities in others. Sometimes it's not easy. So here's an exercise for you next week. Find some people. Today is a good day, today is a Sunday, so many people are coming to the temple. Find some people who you did not have much respect for before. And find something in them that you can genuinely, not artificially, but genuinely actually feel respect for. So find something that you can respect in them. And every day, don't go to sleep unless in your mind you think about some three good qualities in some devotees. In other devotees. It is called collecting jewels. So every day collect three jewels. So three jewels that you see in others. Okay? Is it clear? Yes. Thank you, sir. This is part of this. Let's see here on this verse. Prabhupada quotes. So find somebody to respect, that you can respect, and also every day don't go to sleep until you find at least three jewels in somebody else. Three good qualities in somebody else. And it's a whole different outlook. And Srila Prabhupada speaks about criticizing here, quoting famous verse, Apichatsudarasharo. But even if a devotee engages in abominable activities. How do you say abominable in Slovenian? Very bad. Very repulsive. Very repulsive. Still, again, was mentioned that we tend to reject the whole type of person. The white or black, is it a good or totally bad? It's never like that. There's always bad, but there's always something good. So, even if somebody does something very bad, still, he has some good qualities. And if he's a devotee, so if he is fixed on path of devotion, and Krishna says, he's a father, he's a saint. Even if he has terrible things, but his mind is fixed, let me go to hell, I will serve Krishna. And he yourself, Prabhupada criticized very much. There was one sannyasi who fell down, and his secretary, I think it was Arishara, if I remember correctly, suddenly found out, he immediately contacted, you know, like half the world, contacted so many temples, and he said that, you know, be careful, let the energy go down. So then Prabhupada found out, he was furious. He blasted his servant, he blasted his secretary so much, he said, you fool, what have you done? Why did you do this? Who asked you to call all the temples and tell them that you fell down? What did you achieve by that? He said, now, it was already unpleasant that he fell down, but now he made it very difficult for him to come back. Before, he could have, you know, just, you know, after some time, or quickly come to his senses, but now it's very difficult for him to come back, because everybody is him. And as far as I can understand, later it happened to the same person also, who contacted all the temples. Ramanujacharya said that if we criticize the devotee, we fall down. Then he said, if we criticize the critic for criticizing, we also fall down. Mm-hmm. And if we criticize the critic of the critic for criticizing, we also fall down. And if we criticize the critic of the critic of the critic of the devotee, we also fall down. And if we criticize the critic of the critic of the critic of the critic of the devotee, then we also fall down. Any criticism is dangerous. So doesn't mean we become foolish. Doesn't mean we behave as idiots, you know, and just blind. Not see. Doesn't mean we don't see problems. We may see problems, and we may practically have to avoid and do something to avoid problems. But it means that we also see the good, and we don't become fixated on the problems. As was this story in New York when Prabhupada came and the temple president, he was a sannyasi before, he married some, I don't know if they married, some Japanese, she told she was a Japanese princess. Apparently she wasn't. So he married her, and then they lived in the temple, in luxury, and she kept chicken in the temple fridge and something else, some food. He was keeping a lot of money in his pocket. So Prabhupada was very funny how Prabhupada dealt with this. He got the money back. Then he came and he said, there are some demons in our movement. So then this temple president came to Prabhupada afterwards and said, Prabhupada, I know who you mean. There were some devotees we sent to, you know, to clean your vyasasam, and they didn't bring back your vyasasam on time, so you didn't have your vyasasam to give a class, so they must be the demons. Mm-hmm. That's why you said there are some demons in our world. They disrespected you, pure devotees, Krishna's representative. Prabhupada just looked at him and said, I hear you have a lot of money. So he said, oh yeah, well, Prabhupada, Krishna is merciful, so many things are coming. Then Prabhupada said, I want $100,000. And he said, Prabhupada, that's a lot of money. Prabhupada said, yes, I know, I want it. So he said, okay, Prabhupada. But the bank is closed now, so in the morning I will get it for you. Okay, in the morning. And he said, so after that, everything will be okay, you'll have a good, everything will be alright, you'll be happy with me. So Prabhupada said, you know, during the month, we'll see. So in the morning he got the money, and then he, Prabhupada went on the tour, and he saw all this, you know, the room. They had a room with a gigantic, luxurious double bed and with a mirror on top. for him and his wife. And he saw the fridge and all these things. So he probably fired him, definitely. But then he called all the devotees and then he said, I mean, he said, thank you very much for being so tolerant and obedient. And despite all these defects, he just tolerated and went on. It was one thing he said, then he said the second thing. But you don't have to be so foolish. So the second thing he said. On one side, he appreciates. The second side, he said, you don't have to be so foolish. You should have reacted much earlier. You didn't have to wait so long. It was quite clear what happened. You know? There was nothing subtle was coming. It was quite gross. Yeah. So it doesn't mean we have to be foolish, but again, means we see not just bad, we see both good and bad. And there is one other point that Prabhupada discusses here in the purport. This is about the body. So because how we can criticize the devotee? Okay, character. So as we say, maybe this devotee. Who was it? Somebody said that. There was a devotee who was a little rough. So the devotee said, and I saw him, he said, you are so rough in your being. He said, oh, Prabhuji, you didn't see me before Krishna consciousness. Sometimes, maybe before Krishna consciousness, you were a total monster. So, even if when you become a devotee, something will still be there, right? It's hard to like totally remove all the traces of that character from before. But it's just a carryover, just a remnant from before, the habits from before. The person is working on it. Or somebody may be too bossy, just trying to order everybody around, command everybody. Something from before. But the person is working on it, and he's changing. So it doesn't mean you have to reject him for that, in this respect. But also for the body. And sometimes we think, oh, this person, what I said, complexion. So right, complexion, so you may think, this is an American devotee. Only an Indian devotee can be a good devotee. So only if he has a brown skin, you think, oh, this is an African devotee, he's a black skin, so he's not good. So we form our opinion about the person just in the color of his skin, which is quite wrong. By location, or this devotee is from this place, or from that place, or is from this city. In every country there are some places that we think, oh, this is people from there, or from that country, or from in terms of the body. So this is wrong, this is not correct. Prabhupada addresses this here. This is one of the improper ways of finding fault. Another way of finding fault, which is improper, which is Vaishnava Parada, is to criticize a devotee for his past. Mm-hmm. Maybe he was whoever, maybe he was a drug dealer even or something, or some other unpleasant or bad thing before Krishna consciousness. But he's given this all up, and he's totally rectified. So if you're now treating criticizing for that, then it's our offense against him, because he's already clear of that. Or if he's already working on this problem, he's already removing this problem. Or if there is just some trace of this problem, as we mentioned in the character, some trace of it. So that's mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Harinam Chintamani as Vaishnava, different kinds of Vaishnava. And Prabhupada mentions this bodily Vaishnava Parata with regards to his disciples in India. So there are some Goswamis in India. Some say that we are Nityananda Vamsa, what mentioned in Nityananda Vamsa. So in Vrindavan they are saying, even though there is no Nityananda Vamsa, it does not exist. Nityananda Prabhu did leave. There is no living line of children from Nityananda. They stopped at some point. He had Virabhadra and he had Ganga Mata, but it didn't continue for a while. So So therefore it doesn't even exist, but they are so proud of their Nityananda Rama. There is others. I know some, I always buy medicines in Vrindavan from actually Advaita Vamsa Goswami. He's a great 14 times grandson of Advaita Acharya. Such a sweet devotee, very nice devotee, always gives very good, he likes devotees. I never even heard that, I actually had to ask him, are you a descendant of Advaita? And then he said, yes, 14 generations. They worship him, his deities, Advaita Acharya's deities, and they are very, very nice, very sweet devotee. No problem. He's actually a real Advaita Vamsa, right? He's actually blood from blood, you know, coming from 14 generations. He's very humble. Never even mentioned that. I wouldn't even know if I did that. Also, his uncle is always going to his temple. Very sweet temple. Kishinara Gornitai. Every time I go to downtown, I always go to his temple. I also never knew that he's in the right one. I have to ask him. Are you actually good? Yeah, I know this. Yes. Very humble. Very, very nice to go. And some of these, they think that just because I'm in his family, in fact, the whole world should respect me. I'm Nityananda Rama. I remember some Indian devotees, they asked me to take them to some temples in Vrindavan. So I take them to several places, and I took them to Nityananda Abad, Srinagar Abad, famous place in Srinagar, which actually is run by Nityananda Rama Goswami. And I showed them the deeds, I showed them the tree under which Nityananda Prabhu sat, and showed them the place where Krishna was combing the hair of Srimati Radharani, and you know, his pictures, and showing them, you know, explaining something, also in Hindi, you know, explaining. And then this guy went out, the big court of the king, stood nearby, big guy, and then he was listening, and he said, I don't understand this, what is this? We see some Westerners guiding local Indians in India, showing the Indian holy places, and he is from the West. Not even like directly, but like, you know, in the air, you know. I said, Prabhu, if I didn't bring them here, they wouldn't even know you exist. Even though they are Indians, if I didn't bring them here, they wouldn't even know that you are. There is such a person as Nityananda Rama Goswami. And if you don't go out and preach in, you know, in other places, then how will they come here? Who will explain it to them? At any rate, Prabhupada mentioned that some of them, they were criticizing him for giving initiation to the Westerners and saying, oh, these are American Goswamis. Prabhupada said this is not correct according to this verse, because this is just a boy. And Krishna consciousness movement is a transcendental science, and there is no room for jealousy. It's for Paramahansas. And if somebody becomes envious, it falls down. But I have to say that this has all changed a lot. If in times of Srila Prabhupada he was criticized, now it is practically accepted. I hardly can remember anybody like criticizing or neglecting me for being a Western devotee. On the contrary, even in the temples, and like I remember, you went to Nageshwar temple near Dwarka, one of the 12 main temples of Lord Shiva in India, one of the 12 Jyotirlingas. And this is a very famous Shiva temple, deep in the cave. Like, it's like you go on the top and it's like 40 meters down is there in the cave. And we came there, I came with another devotee, and there was like, you know, 500 Indians moving in front, and there is a barrier, and everybody is, you know, just looking from far, from behind the barrier. At this Shivalinga. So we went there and we took our darshan, and then I took some prayers to Lord Shiva by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and I took this out and started chanting this prayer, started reading this prayer. And then the pujari came from there and came to the barrier and said, "What are you standing here? Come inside." And he opened the barrier and he took both of us and he brought us on the altar right next to Lord Shiva. And he said, "You sit here, why are you standing here? You sit here." So we sat there and we chanted the prayer and everything. Then he came and he brought a whole bucket of some water. He said, "You can wash Lord Shiva if you want." So he could, you know, wash my water. So obviously we were quite white, and all the Indians were still behind the barriers. He just saw, okay, these are sadhus, these are devotees. So he was appreciated, he was respected. So you can see, by Prabhupada's potency, Srila Prabhupada's potency, this has changed a lot. Prabhupada has actually proven his point that devotees, being a devotee is not something based in the body. I remember also I was on the train and some old Indian gentleman, he saw me, and the devotees, and he said, "Do you have a gun, sir?" I said, "Yeah, I have a gun." Okay. And I said, "Here is Guru Kripa, mercy of my Guru Maharaj." "Yes, of course, he's always Guru Kripa." Nice. So he was satisfied that, okay, this is not by, this was by initiation, the person got initiated and got granted, but that's according to the Shastra. He didn't have any complaint about it. So that's, you can see Prabhupada's influence on India before he was criticized, now you can see that. I cannot remember anybody actually presenting and complaining about India. So this is another point that Prabhupada mentioned here, that you should not judge by the body, who is a devotee, who is not a devotee. It depends actually on the consciousness. Like, Prabhupada, you can actually read, there was one of the very prominent gurus in Gaudiya Math, who you can see a letter written in the folio of Bhaktivedanta Vedavaya. He came up to Srila Prabhupada to Vrindavan, and Srila Prabhupada had a feast cooked, but he was afraid to take it because he was afraid that, okay, Western people cooked it. So he didn't want to take it, but all because it's, you know, made by Western people. And then after some time, he wrote to Srila Prabhupada and said, "I have a big, I'm building a big project in Vishakhapatnam, so you are getting a lot of donations. Would you like to give some money to help us to build a temple here?" Prabhupada writes a very funny letter to him. He's sitting there saying, "Maharaj, thank you very much for your letter. And yes, you are correct. Every day we are distributing thousands and thousands of books, and actually every day we are receiving, give the number, so many lakhs of rupees. Every day we get so many lakhs of rupees. So definitely this is a lot of lakhs and nice money. You are asking us that, you know, whether we could give it to you. So yes, we could give it to you, but I don't think I should give it to you because this money is coming from the West, Western people, and this will contaminate you. Mm-hmm. You'll become contaminated. If you take this money, you'll become contaminated because you're from a Brahmin family. If you take this money, you'll be contaminated. So I'm sorry, just to not to contaminate you, I think I should give you anything.
Just a few years, I don't know, like 10, 15 years, this same Swami started accepting Western disciples and everything. Started giving them sannyas, giving them, engaging them in service. You can see that all of them follow Srila Prabhupada. Alright. So, it's important to see devotees spiritual, from a spiritual point of view, not to criticize them. Prabhupada mentions that this is the most dangerous offense, Hati Mata, very injurious. Prabhupada says, one should therefore avoid observing a pure devotee externally, but should try to see the internal features and understand how he is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. In this way, one can avoid seeing a devotee from a material point of view. Actually, it does not refer only to a pure devotee. Preaching in itself means finding a spiritual potential in a person. Not seeing materially, oh, this is here's a person with a purse. I can engage him in service. It doesn't inspire anybody. Actually, to make anybody a devotee, or to inspire anybody, you have to see that here is a spirit soul who has the potential to serve Krishna. He is a potential. He is a devotee, basically. Right? To see, to respect this spark of devotion in every person. Even just to preach to anybody, doesn't refer only to exalted devotees, you know, somebody who sits on the asasam or something. It refers to every devotee and even to people on the street if you want to preach. If you want to preach, you have to see the spirit in them. That's how you can inspire them to become devotees. So this is the main last hurdle or obstacle before we can enter the beautiful kingdom of the sweet holy name. Sri Rupa Goswami in Upadeshamrita gives us these valuable instructions in which you can approach the highest treasure in life. So next Sunday, Krishna willing, we will discuss verses 7 and 8. No. Okay, any questions or comments? You have some questions.
I have a question on four.
Yes, yes, sir.
I would like to ask something from here. This is for about making offensive. It's actually, I would say, it depends also, you know, if you see if the person is, on which position the person is, also what means criticism. What you are criticizing, if somebody's color or body, the form that something else is different color, but if somebody's tries to manipulate this philosophy or something else, then I guess one can say something. I heard also there's a difference between criticism, if you want to pose yourself being better than somebody else, or constructive criticism, say something which don't really apply to. Or misinterpret the
Vedas or Prabhupada,
or misuse the positions.
Alright, yes. Okay. So, there are several considerations here. So, one thing, what is a criticism? So, criticism is really something that is directed at putting the person down. And you try to put the person down, that would be a criticism. And this can also be allowed in three cases. If, with a caution, but in three cases. If this is our student or disciple, if this is our child, or this is our subordinate. Sometimes they need to be chastised or criticized in order to shake them up, in order to push them for some improvement. This is in the Vaishnava etiquette, yes? That Vaishnava chastises only his disciples and children. It can also mean subordinates, so subordinates in the work, you know, if somebody is working under you. However, if somebody, for example, mentions something misrepresents philosophy, or does something wrong. So if it is harmful for others, then we can respectfully present the proper point of view. But again, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu shows the way. It's mentioned that in Chaitanya Charitamrita there is this verse, yeah, that we put the straw in the take the straw in the in our teeth and say, Prabhuji, you are so wonderful. You are so amazing. Can you press a button on that suffering thing? Yeah, it's not okay. Thank you. So we put a straw in the teeth and approach the person and say, you are so wonderful, you are so learned. And Prabhupada says, if we say this to a person, then the person will say, oh, what do you want? You understand me so nicely. you really know me. And then you can tell the person that leave all you know aside and surrender to Lord Chaitanya. This is so much better. So in other words, again, we do not try to totally cut or kill the person as a complete. That's our Western inclination. If somebody presents something wrong, then the whole person is wrong. The whole person is bad. So if we manage to see something good in a person and correct only this misunderstanding of a person, then it will be so much easier for him to accept this. If we respect the person, see, if I say something wrong, and you respect me, and tell me, oh, this is should be like this and like this, I feel inspired to actually accept your point of view or change. But if you disrespect me and say, you fool, you idiot, where did you get this? This is completely wrong. This is completely against Shastra. Then I will reject both your correction and you, because I have no inspiration to, you see no value in me. There's no inspiration to actually change. You don't see any potential in me to change, not any potential in me to actually be better. So therefore I also don't see it. If you know the right answer and you don't see the potential in me, then how I can see the potential? So therefore it's can be a very long-term war. You know, we have so many wars between devotees of different factions. So, as there is the saying, hate the sin, not the sinner. And if it's a minor mistake, then if it's not dangerous, then can privately. There's also a science, even materially, there is a science how to correct a person. Like if in a work place a chief or executive or whoever, a manager, he can chastise, he can blast a subordinate for a mistake. If he does this alone, just in four eyes behind the closed doors without anybody hearing, then the person feels even like purified or chastened. But if it's done in front of other people, then it's an attack on ego. It's an attack on ego. And the person doesn't accept and doesn't produce desired effect. In the same way also when we correct other devotees, there can be better ways of doing this. Maybe so there are certain rules. First of all, encourage the person, mention something good, then show the proper way, and then express your trust and faith that the person can do better than that. And then it creates a much better chance that the person can actually accept. But if this is an enemy, so presenting an inimical philosophy, okay, that's a different question. Again, it will be more effective. Sometimes you see, just like recently on the internet, there's an exchange. There's one person attacking, saying, why do I do this one? Saying, okay, because this and this and this. Some reason. Not very realized reasons. Then and another person replies who is not a devotee, but who is showing, is some karmic doctor, who is showing that he is familiar with devotees, and he's showing this devotee how he is wrong. First of all, he's criticizing devotees for something that's not correct, and he agrees about something, but basically he says you should be more thoughtful. And then a third person comes and blasts not even this first blooping devotee, but this doctor, saying that you're a rascal, you are not sincere, you have no interest in spiritual life, how can you say anything about spiritual life, you are not interested in this. So this person didn't even understand what this doctor was saying. And then he's blasting him completely, and he's calling him names, and he's saying, and then a third person, or a fourth person writes a letter and says that, Prabhuji, if you want to discuss somebody, if in the first few lines you don't present a logical argument and you just call him names, then I cannot even get, maybe if at the end of your letter you say something constructive, but because your arguments are all just about how idiotic he is, I'm not feeling interested to read such a letter. I cannot even get, maybe there's something down. So if you, in the future, if you could in the beginning of your letter present some positive point, what has to be there, or what is your actually logical argument about what that person said. So even when we want to attack some person for valid reasons, we have valid reasons, this person has to be attacked, there are ways to do this more effectively. If we do it in a cool way, you can hear Hridayananda Maharaj, this is something amazing how he's using logic to, if you present very logically, just 1, 2, 3, how what the person says is illogical. And if you do this in a respectful mood, then immediately this person's argument falls on the face, and this person may look even more foolish than if I call him a fool. If I just call him a fool, I myself look foolish. But if I just humbly, respectfully present it like this, it is attractive. It is attractive for more cultured people, and not just for the people who just put their hands into muck and something dirty. And this person will have easier time to actually accept. Okay, this is this argument, so they will be more agreeable to. So this is a culture of actually arguing. You can see how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Keshava Kashmiri. He could have defeated him in 300 different ways. But what he did, he asked him to compose a beautiful poem. He composed an amazing poem. And everybody was impressed. And then he said, can you please, in verse number 5, can you please show good side and bad side? And then this person showed the good side, which is there is no bad side. And he said, I'm not an expert, but as far as I understand from grammar, this is a defect, that is a defect, and that is a defect, grammatically. And he couldn't say anything. And everybody started laughing. And then Stanyavu's Gauranga, Nimai Pandit, he stopped everybody. He said, don't laugh. He's a scholar. Why are you laughing? He stopped that. And what was the result? He became a big Vaishnava Acharya. This guy said, Kashmir. He wrote Krama Deepika, which all of us use in our deity worship, even in our simple life. He became a big Acharya. So that was effective, I think.
So, I guess then, I'm just thinking about it.
Yes.
Many times we tend to put it as many non-devotees, because if we see a problem, perverts, fools, rascals,
yes,
dogs,
yes.
Demons,
yeah.
We choose,
we choose, and then we take the same attitude,
which from Prabhupada's point of view is not offensive. But if we take that attitude,
then
we try to correct, and we try to...
Yeah, you can see, it's one thing if an 80-year-old Indian monk says something, who is completely free from envy actually. And when he calls names somebody, I remember sometimes you hear, when you read this is one thing, but when you hear how Prabhupada says this in the lecture, he says this with love. He says, these fools and rascals, he feels compassion for these people. Right? And it's like a father or grandfather chastising. So you feel, oh yeah. But if, you know, if I'm a 19-year-old boy who still, you know, all the desires are raging inside, and I just use, you are pigs and you are dogs, you know, it's something different. It's not the same. Yeah, so yeah, we have to consider, just like Birbal, Emperor Akbar, he asked his court, what should be the punishment, what should be done to the person who pulls on his mustache, who, you know, tears his mustache. So one courtier said he should be flogged, he should be whipped. Another says he should be thrown out of the city. And a third says he should be killed. And then he asks Birbal, what do you think? Birbal says he should be given sweets. Everybody goes, what? He's pulling on emperor's mustache, whiskers, and given sweets? You're mad, Birbal? And Akbar says, can you explain? How is this? He's pulling my whiskers and giving him sweets? Sweets? And Birbal says, yes, because only one person can pull on the emperor's whiskers, your grandson. So if your grandson pulls on your pulls on your mustache, you give him sweets. Because this is like... So Akbar was very happy. He gave some ring to everyone. Yes, you're correct. So you have to see who is saying, who is doing what. Not just, you know, if a grandson is pulling on the whistle, don't kill him. So different audience. Is it okay? Okay, so thank you very much. If you still have some questions you can discuss, otherwise please do the home task that we discussed and see whether it helps you to chant attentively as we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Please accept my humble obeisance.